Brother Dak, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, sir.
Yeah, come over here.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good morning,
David. Okay, good morning. I'm sorry. Okay, then. Well, thanks for coming. And I was told maybe one more may show up. Well, anyway, good morning and welcome to the new downtown council committee meeting that the council president, I'm going to let him speak in a second, but I think it's more appropriate that we go around the desks here and just pronounce our name. We'll start to the right here.
Jacoby Pittman, District 8.
Leanna Cumber, District 5.
Councilman Gaffin, Reggie Gaffin, District 7.
Aaron Bowman, District 3.
Sam Newby, Group 5 at large.
And before we move forward, I want to thank the president. Anytime you can get the president to come to your meeting, that's always important. And he had a vision for us three. Is DIA here? Ms. Boyd, can you please come up here if you can? I would love for you to sit up here.
Yeah, we got to sit right by the president.
And can you introduce yourself real quick?
Lori Boyer, CEO, Downtown Investment Authority.
Okay, and so the next voice you're going to hear for about a couple of seconds or minutes is the councilman president, who's going to just say a couple words, and then we'll move forward with our presentations this morning.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for agreeing to chair this committee. Also, Councilwoman Cumber, thank you for willing to be on this committee, and also Councilmember Bowman. Y'all bring a vast array of experience. I really thank you. One of my visions is to improve downtown. Jacksonville is a great city, but I believe to be an elite city, we have to improve downtown. We have to bring more people downtown, and downtown has to be the centerpiece of Jacksonville. And so that's why I formed this committee. I think now my numbers could be off, but I think we have 8,000 people that live here in the downtown area. But my vision, in the next 5 years to improve that to maybe 12 to 15,000. Like I said, my numbers could be off, and I know the DIACO is going to tell me the real numbers, but that's the reason why I started this committee, to improve downtown, to make downtown the centerpiece of Jacksonville. That is real important for make Jacksonville to be an elite city here, not only in the state, but in the country.
Okay, and thank you for that. So we made a small adjustment today. We had three presentations, but to be all fair to each president, we kind of asked one not to speak today so we can give adequate time to the two, because I think they are important. So the downtown Jacksonville Riverwalk Special Center, the Atkins Group won't be presiding today. They'll be at our next meeting. So today, I believe, we're going to have at first, and we'll give them 20 minutes, and then we'll get Jacksonville Riverfront rehabilitized, 20 minutes, and then we'll get a Jacobs Group 20 minutes. So, Tom, if your group here to, where Tom at? Where Park? We'll let Park go first, and then y'all go second, if you're okay with that, okay? All right, so Park, you want to come up and talk about, once we get my special project, Bourbon 2, down, y'all going to love what I think he's going to be presenting today. Once that's come down, which is slated to be in December now, and you can give that date to my colleagues too so they can hear from me.
Okay. My name is Park Beeler. I'm the managing member of Jacksonville Riverfront Revitalization, which along with its affiliate, PB Riverfront Revitalization of Jacksonville, the official owner of the property formerly known as Berkman Plaza 2. As all of you know, we've been working to demolish the old shell structure that basically went into limbo 14 years ago when the parking garage that was under construction at the time collapsed, killing one and injuring several others and resulting in many, many lawsuits, and ultimately forced the development company into bankruptcy, which took another few years to resolve. And we purchased the property back in April of this year. And previously to that, we evaluated the structure, the shell structure, to look at various ways of demolishing it. And one of the terms of our acquisition of the property was we had to agree to demolish the building in order to take title to it. So after we looked at the structure, we concurred that the building needed to come down and really was not suitable for redevelopment, the shell building. So I'm sure, as all of you know, that building has sat in its present state for 14 years and has basically cast a dark shadow over downtown development. And quite frankly, it's been one of our objectives is to take that dark shadow away and replace it with a substantial investment in a new project on that site. Our intention at this point was to demolish the building mechanically. We felt that that was a viable way to take the building down. We had originally approached the city to implode the building and bring it down quickly. But for various reasons, that was not an acceptable approach at that time. So we contracted with a mechanical contractor, as some of you may recall from the media reports, that was using a high-reach excavator, which was like a big alligator jaw, to take the building down. And they began their work and were making good progress until some structural problems were encountered that caused great concern that the building was more unstable than had previously been thought. We brought in structural engineers to do another analysis of the building, and they concurred that the building was not in danger of falling down, which was the most important determination we needed to make for safety purposes. But in order to bring it down, the mechanical approach to demolition would not work. The only safe way to bring it down was by implosion. So at that point, we undertook a very long, drawn-out process of preparing the building for imploding. That turned out to be a much more complex operation than might otherwise have been the case, primarily because of the work that had already been done on the structure. That created some additional instability that caused an adjustment in the implosion technique. So that all of that process has been underway since it's been now about 3.5 months, and it was finished last week. The building is now ready to be imploded, and the implosion contractor, which is the largest implosion company in the world, actually, they had about 22 implosions scheduled in their books. So we had to find the best date for everybody concerned to bring the building down. So last week, after consultation with all the city departments and the sheriff's office and the fire department and JEA and everyone else that needed to check off on a date, we selected December 20th, which is a Monday, as the implosion date. And at this point, that is a firm date, and that's the date the building will come down. That is Christmas week, obviously, which is both good and bad. I think the good is many people will have already taken that week off at that time. Schools will be out, and the traffic will be substantially lighter than normally would be the case. And 10 o'clock in the morning on the 20th, it will come down. So I'm pleased to tell you that at long last, our Christmas gift to the city will be to bring that building down at long last. So what we plan to do, which again we've announced, is we plan to replace that old structure with a multi-use project that will encompass approximately 250 to 300 units. that will be either residential, purely residential, or a combination residential hotel. And the residential units may be apartments or condominiums. We've been in contact with somewhere in the range of 25 different companies that are interested in developing one of those three possibilities. And I think at this point, our preference is to do condominiums. And the project itself will be somewhat different in architecture to its next-door neighbor, Berkman Plaza One. It'll be a transitional architectural statement that basically embraces what we might call the Bay Street persona, which is a lot of brick, the so-called Camden Yards architecture. So the building will be, at its base, largely a brick and concrete structure. There will be approximately 100 to 150 riverfront townhouses and about 90 additional units in a mid-rise rising above an a totally enclosed parking garage. Behind that will be a tower, and the tower in its present configuration will be between 26 and probably as many as 36 stories. So all of that is now being finalized in design elements, and between now and the first of the year, we'll be presenting that to the Downtown Development Review Board for their architectural review. We think they'll like it. We've done a lot of community outreach to the neighbors and to others. Everybody seems to be very pleased with the architectural statement. So we'll begin work, hopefully right after the first of the year, on the new project. And on the date of the demolition, we'll probably announce what the actual use of the building will be. We do have a ground level element that will be retail that will wrap around the building, 270 degrees, and self-contained parking for over about 550-plus parking spaces. It is also our intent to have a specialty grocery operation on the ground level, which is sorely needed for the residents in that area. So essentially, that's the project. And since we've been working with our architects, KBJ, who have, as most of you probably know, designed about 20 of the 35, 40 tallest buildings in Jacksonville going back 50-plus years, we became acquainted with their participation in the proposal of the Jacobs team. Jacobs Engineering formed this team back in 2018 for a new convention center on the site of the former City Hall and County Courthouse. I personally have been involved in convention center propositions in my previous business life. For half of a decade, I was with the Austin, Texas Chamber of Commerce in the Economic Development Department. And Austin had at that time a convention center that, very much like Jacksonville today, was in the wrong place and it was too small, and the other cities of Texas basically were taking all of the conventions that might otherwise like to come to Austin.
Excuse me one second, Mr. Yes, Park. You two talking about your project, let somebody else present about that, but I'm going to allow my colleagues to ask questions right
okay,
quick.
Okay, sure.
Yes. Yeah. Do y'all have any questions about, yes, Mr. Bowman, go ahead.
Good to see you, Park. A couple questions. A lot of things went wrong on Berkman 2. One of them was a lot of outcry from Berkman 1 residents that they didn't like what was going in. They weren't involved in the process. What was your intention to get the townhomes down there engaged, Berkman 1 people engaged, before you roll out this plan?
Well, I think we've had, at last count, 7 Zoom meetings with the Berkman Plaza residents, the last one of which was about 10 days ago. at which time we've given all the Berkman Plaza 1 residents the opportunity to ask questions and to voice their concerns. And to my knowledge, they have been answered satisfactorily to them. I think that when the problem was encountered with the instability of the building, which certainly we had no warning of, and we had to stop suddenly in order to reassess not only the technique but also the possible danger to the building next door. Obviously, we reached out immediately to them at that time and told them that we had punched the pause button until we had decided basically what was the best way to take the building down.
So, okay. Now, you answered my question, and we're short on time. I don't mean to cut you off, but okay. but if I can, I got a couple more questions through the chair. You mentioned 550 parking spots. I think the successful projects we've seen lately have made sure there's public access on some of those. So please have that in your plan that now that we're opening up the Riverwalk, that that'd be a great place for people to come and use it. And I know Ms. Boyer will be very, very engaged in that as well. The last thing, and just recently it looks like finances have been a problem on projects we've approved. Can you, I don't need to know your numbers, but why should I look at you and think that you've got the financial resources to pull this off?
Okay, on the financing side, the original cost estimates for the demolition were about $1,300,000. When we had to stop and pause on the mechanical approach to demolition, we basically had to eat about $600,000 of expenses that were not recoverable. We then costed out the cost of the implosion, and as it stands right now, the total cost of demolition will be about $2.6 million. We have financing arranged through three sources, two of which want to do a wraparound financing for the vertical development of the project, and we're still negotiating final terms with them. We also have a group of investors who are standing by to make sure that all the expenses associated with the demolition go forward. So at this point, our focus, obviously, we would prefer to have a single financing, and we're negotiating with those two parties right now for the final terms of that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
By the way, I probably, when we have the demolition, we'll announce basically our financial structure.
So I got one question. What percentage you have for small businesses as well as minorities in this particular project?
Well, that's a good question. And we, from day one, have been committed to utilize minority contractors wherever possible. Because of the technical nature of the demolition, that wasn't possible basically for the complex engineering approaches for the demo itself. However, once the debris field has been brought down onto the ground, our plan is to use minority contractors for the debris removal and recycling of that material extensively. So our goal has been from the first day really to look at about 30% of the total project cost to be focused at minority enterprises, and that's still the case.
Thank you.
That will be true when we begin construction as well of the vertical side. So,
thank you, Councilwoman.
Cumber.
I think Ms. Pittman wanted, she, no, first. You want to go first? Because I know you got to go.
That's the question I was going
to ask. I know. Okay, so Ms. Cumber next, she kept kind of trying to get to me. So go ahead on Ms. Cumber.
Hi, through the chair. Thanks for coming. What's your construction time frame once you demo, so from like January 1, assuming, you know, baking in the DDRB and all of that as well?
Probably the first 3 to 6 months are going to be focused on permitting, and there's a variety of different levels of permitting that we'll have to go through. One, of course, will be with DIA and with the city itself once we have the final use factors defined. The second level will be with the Department of Environmental Protection for basically bringing the site up to the current standards for flood control. And then the third level will be the actual engineering design approvals that will come through through the building department of the city. So we're hopeful that can go quickly. One never knows how long that will take, but I would say 3 months would be the best estimate, and 6 months probably a more likely estimate, and then we'd start actually construction after about 6 months.
And then the construction time frame?
Probably about 24 months. And again, many factors come into play there. Weather, for one, unforeseen events that always seem to happen in the construction business. So one thing I do want to mention here, in all cases, you know, because of what happened previously to the site and some of the events that have happened in South Florida, we will be extremely cautious every step of the way to guarantee the safety of everybody in the neighborhood as well as the workers themselves. I mean, we're going to exercise an abundance of caution, no matter what that costs. So,
I'm sorry. It was just one more question through the chair. So, is any of the demo going to create any additional environmental cleanup? Is there? I know DEP is looking at it. Do you anticipate any environmental cleanup on top of the flooding?
Yes. And again, that kind of depends on the weather that day. The actual plan of implosion will bring everything straight down. So there'll be a rubble pile pretty much on the footprint of the building as it is now. That won't be a problem. We've taken every precaution to avoid any debris bouncing outside that corridor. We've put up three tall shipping containers between the site and Berkman Plaza 1 to make sure that nothing bounces that way. We've got all kinds of dust shields that we'll put up, not only next door, but on the across the street for the sheriff's department. There will be dust, and again, that depends on the wind that day. If we have a lot of dust that blows in one direction, there may be some deposits that people will want cleaned up, and we're prepared to do whatever's necessary when that happens. Most of it, if the wind is typical for this time of year, it'll be blowing from the northeast or the northwest, which will carry it pretty much out over the river. So the building has been evaluated extensively for contamination within the materials that are there. It's clean. No asbestos. There's no hazardous material. So the dust will just basically be a fine powder that is typical of an implosion.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. And one other question, and then I think we need to move forward.
Follow-up question. You mentioned about the minority participation that it would be 30%. Will you be working with the City of Jacksonville JSET program as well? Would you be needed?
Yes, absolutely. And we have a consulting engineer, Steve Davis, who will be helping us with that. Interfacing again with the minority community to make sure we don't miss anybody who might want to participate in that process.
All right, thank you. I don't know if we need to have dialogue, any more dialogues about this at this point. Council President, you got anything else?
Well, only thing I want to say, I'm glad about the minority part of it, because we need to make sure that the minority part of it does work, does the 30% does work, so we can have some minority contracts to come in, because that's another one of my priorities, to make sure our minority contracts to have a part. Also, I know you mentioned about having retail and also having a grocery store in there, and I know we have another development coming I think that's the North Bank, is going to also have a grocery store. Y'all going to have the grocery store is going to be a big grocery store or a small grocery store?
It'll be a specialty store.
Specialty store, okay.
Example would be Sprouts or Whole Foods, one of that genre of stores. Yeah. It wouldn't be like a Publix, a full-fledged Publix, simply because there's not enough room on the site for that. Wow. But our goal here is to create an opportunity for grocery shopping within walking distance of the neighborhood. So I know the one over in the on the other side of Main Street in the Brooklyn area, that will serve primarily that area. So our goal is to serve not only our project and the plaza next door, but also the other residential projects on the north bank, specifically, that don't have a grocery store within walking distance now.
Okay. Well, so, I'm glad to know it's going to be a specialty store instead of a big store, because I would be concerned to have two big stores in that one little area, and in some part of the Jacksonville don't have no grocery stores, so that was a big concern of mine. So thank you for that.
I don't know if I've not been real familiar with the specialty stores. I don't do a lot of grocery shopping, but they pretty much these days are full service grocery operations. So they'll have just about everything that people would want.
So also, and I stepped outside, so I might have missed it. So what do you think of the economic impact is going to be with this construction, you know, for downtown and for the citizens that live downtown when it comes to working this project?
Well, on the construction side, of course, there will be probably 400 to 500 construction jobs during construction. Afterward, depending on the retail operations and the housekeeping operations for whatever ultimate use is made, we anticipate about 250 to 300 jobs.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
In closing, what's the total estimate amount of money going to be spent on this project?
We're looking right now at the cost elements for the three different optional forms of development, whether it be apartments or hotel or a combination of apartments and hotel or condominiums. And I would say at this point our focus is primarily on condominiums. And for that reason, the numbers will be higher. The cost of the construction will be higher. We're looking at it somewhere between $130 and $150 million total project cost.
We would love for you to come back perhaps next year when you get the total numbers after we get the old structure down,
right,
so we can move forward and give our blessing to DIA on what we believe may be a good project.
Right.
Okay.
I did want just to say one last thing. I mentioned my previous experience with convention centers.
But so
I just wanted to say
that. No, time out. Okay. So I want you to talk about your project. So
okay.
We're going to allow that to move forward. So if you're through talking about one of your presentation, and then let me go into a discussion with my colleagues.
No problem.
Okay?
Okay, sure.
All right, thank you, sir.
Let's see. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, and that is that all of you here and the rest of the council are cordially invited to the demolition itself.
We will be there. At least I will. And I know my two colleagues to the right or left probably join me.
I'm gonna try to. We're looking at a viewpoint on the south bank of the river, so that we won't have a problem with viewing it without getting full of dust. So,
well, Paul, thank you. I'm gonna keep moving forward. You did a tremendous job. Before we bring up the Jacobs Group to talk about a convention center, we need to have a council discussion with DIA as well as legal, for somebody to tell me what we need to be doing at this particular time. So I'm going to ask Ms. Boer, who's over DIA, to take the first shot at what legally we can do or what we can discuss based on her spirits, because we want to make sure we don't break any kind of law as leaders here as we can. So can you kind of guide me and us before they, if they can present?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll actually let Mr. Sawyer provide the guidance, but what I am going to tell you is the position we are in. So I was not aware this was on the agenda, and I apologize that I didn't have the opportunity to talk to you about this earlier. But my board voted last week, and we issued, it was published in the paper on Friday, a notice of disposition for the courthouse site. So we are in an open procurement on the courthouse site. It closes December 22nd. And the terms of the procurement, as I understand it, do not preclude a bid by the Jacobs Group because it contemplates potentially mixed use of a whole variety of things. It could be residential, hotel, retail, entertainment, civic use, etc. So because you're in an open procurement, I can tell you that DIA is in a cone of silence, the city employees and Public Works and elsewhere in a cone of silence, and I sent texts to OGC asking them what your position was since ultimately you will vote on any disposition. So that's what Mr. Sawyer is here to respond to.
And good morning, Mr. Sawyer. Can you help guide us?
John Sawyer, Office of General Counsel. That was a very accurate summation by Ms. Boyer. So in accordance with its own terms, the notice of disposition states that from the issuance of the notice, which has already occurred, the respondent shall have no contact with city representative, elected officials, employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not necessarily a direct prohibition from this committee receiving the presentation, but what will occur is that the presenter then applies and submits a bid. They're immediately are going to be subject to a possible bid protest. An analysis will be undertaken as to whether they're presenting to this body created an unfair competitive advantage as to that bidder, and if so, they'll be disqualified on that basis. So the advice to this committee would be to not participate in accepting the presentation because you're, in doing so, inviting a respondent to violate the terms of the notice.
Okay, thank you. Any one of my colleagues have any questions to Mr. Sawyer? So somebody from the Jacobs Group, can you step up here? Well, I'm going to just ask you a simple question, and I guess that question would be, are y'all going to participate in this RFP that's out in the streets now? That's a yes or no question.
Yes, thank you. My name is Bill Kestelik. I'm a principal with Jacobs. No, we are not intending on participating on the recently released notice of disposition. This presentation is in reference to the unsolicited offer and the RFQ that we presented back in 2018.
So then legal, Mr. Sawyer, tell us what we can do. They're not on this particular RFP is out. They're not participating in that. They want to present on. So I need your guidance here.
I tend to give conservative advice, fair enough. I still think it's advisable as to any contractor discussing or potential developer discussing Fort on Bay that you not accept a presentation because there is a solicitation document out there. Doesn't mean they couldn't change their mind tomorrow and submit. It's really now just an element of risk. Do you want to accept the presentation knowing that there's an opportunity that we could have a corrupted notice of disposition process should they submit? I understand they have said they have not, but your hands are not unclean. But the safest path forward is to not accept the presentation today or during the silence period.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask my colleagues, y'all respond so we can all to make some kind of ruling decision here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I prefer not to receive any solicitation today.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Common.
When does the period end?
December 22nd.
Okay.
And the scores, so just so you know and you have information, the bids that are received will be scored after that period closes, and then they will be presumably, based on the schedule that's out there, would be considered by the DIA board subcommittee. There'll be oral presentations in early January, ultimately to be awarded mid-January at the mid-January board meeting. Mr. Sawyer can perhaps tell you, I don't know that I know the answer technically, as to once the competitive solicitation period has closed, whether you could receive a proposal or a presentation prior to our board awarding, or even certainly you could after our board awarded, because any disposition will ultimately come to you. So you would have the opportunity to then consider at that time, but you could potentially do it in early January, even before the board awards, if you want. But I'm confident you can after we've closed the process.
Mr. Sawyer, can you come up? So it seems to me that we should be able to, once, you know, that we should be able to receive any information on December 23rd once it closes prior to DIA deciding, because if we as council members are going to hear the information one way or the other, it's largely irrelevant if we hear it before DIA decides or after DIA decides, because we still won't have made our decision. So I would say that legally we'd be fine hearing it.
Unfortunately, I can't speak directly to this notice because I wasn't involved in the drafting of it. I have not read it in full. I can tell you generally on any city procurement, the zone of silence, so to speak, is lifted once the award has been made. So it's not just receiving the disposition, but also the DIA actually selecting. At that point, it's typically when it would be lifted. I don't know that time frame in relation to the 23rd date, because we'll receive by the 23rd, then there's a period of time to score an award.
But isn't that cone is relevant to DIA and not relevant to council members, because we're not under that cone, because we wouldn't have my question is, if we are not under a cone before we vote, then for us it would seem that our cone that we could receive that information after the 22nd. Maybe DIA couldn't participate but and Lori Hoppin. We have too many lawyers in the room.
Yes.
Through the chair to Councilwoman Cumber. I think what Mr. Sawyer is saying is that the competitive solicitation process closes when our board votes mid-January. So that would be the time you could take your not part of the competitive solicitation after that. There isn't a competitive solicitation after our board votes. Then you're just making a decision of public policy. And so after the close in January, you could accept whatever other information and evaluation you wanted. But that between the time the bids close and they are evaluated and awarded, the competitive solicitation process is still active.
Right. Yeah, I guess what I'm kind of hung up on is that we're not a part of that competitive solicitation bid process as council members. And so
you're covered by the obligation of a respondent not to provide information or contact you. You are included in that umbrella. And again, a typical procurement is through the selection process before everything becomes a public record.
Okay. I guess I need to understand it a little more, just because I think that, and maybe it's just a public policy thing, that I think it seems odd to me that we wouldn't be able to see everything before we were able, because what we see during this process will inform whether how we vote at the end, correct? And so I hate to invoke, but it reminds me a little bit about our debates during JEA and that whole process. Because for me as a policymaker, what I'm hearing is you're going to get one choice and you can take it or leave it. And if you're going to have to kind of catch up to see what the other options were in order, because we can't make an informed choice, not that we don't, you know, listen to DIA's recommendations, but we as council can't make an informed choice if we don't hear all of the options and get all of the pitches. So I would think that, I think today is probably not a good time based on everything that happened last week. Unfortunately, I know everyone was prepared, but I would want to continue this conversation, because I don't think I agree with the legal assessment that we couldn't hear it prior to DIA making that decision. And I know that Lori wants to jump in.
And I certainly understand. And by the way, had you had your meeting a week ago, you could have taken all the information you wanted because the notice didn't issue until Friday. But it was just a timing of your earlier meeting got canceled. And as a result, we're now in that open period.
And I understand that. So my question is, I don't know, Mr. Sawyer, Ms. Bohr, if we wait till after it's closed, somehow this or any project that we like and we recommend to you guys, even though it didn't go through this bid process, what's going to be our obligation? For example, say if I'm understanding what you said, and if we hear it now, we'll probably be in some kind of violation. Probably somebody out there can sue us because it seems as though some of the council has already made a predetermined. So once it's closed, the 21st, 22nd, or whenever that date is, and then we decide to listen to this, and it's something that we, as a legislative body, may like and may petition you guys to take a look at this, what happens?
To the chair, again, I will take Mr. Sawyer's advice, but here's my understanding of what happens. This is Community Redevelopment Agency property. The only way we can dispose of community agency property is by a public notice of disposition. So if after the 14th we present to you the particular project that has scored the highest and our board has found to be in the public interest and whatever, and you are evaluating that project and four others that people have presented to you, and you don't like the one that our board selected, then the ultimate situation would be you would reject it. And if you reject it, we would have to put out another notice of solicitation to consider other offers. But people would have to bid through that process. If they fail to bid through the process, they can't be considered for a disposition within the community redevelopment area.
So you answer that. So what happens? So if that's the case and the council reject the 3, 4, 10, whatever you get, and this group, the Atkins group, at some point want to present and somehow 10 of us like that, and we make a recommendation to you that we don't like them and we'd like for you to just put it back out there, and they then present it in front of us. That's a violation, though. I'm trying to see if after we pass your process and you send it to us, we don't like it, but yet they don't present it, or 10 others done presented, and we got a couple presenters that perhaps we like. Are we still putting ourselves at some point reliable for something? I just want to make sure I protect us.
Two different things going on. We are, once the procurement process is closed, you can hear presentations from as many people as you want. I would say that I'm concerned about the conversation that's going on right now, though, because if I were someone out there trying to bid on this right now and spending a lot of money on design and everything, I would be very concerned that the council's talking about rejecting the bids. And that's a very chilling effect. So when I heard you start out by saying that you want to focus on downtown and have a great centerpiece for Jacksonville and really be urgent about it, I think we need to let the procurement process that's on the street play out and see what kind of great bids you get before we start talking about what else you want to do.
Excuse me, if I may. Ms. Bohr, Mr. Gaffney.
Excuse me, say your name again.
Bill Kestlick with Jacobs. One thing that needs to be pointed out, we did go through DIA's process in 2018. We were selected and most highly rated for our project. We competed against, I believe it was three other contenders. So we have gone through this process. This is the exact same project. Has not altered. Our team is still in place. For whatever reason, once we got that notice, it did not move forward. And all we're asking is for the chance for this project to move forward through the process that Lori just stated.
Let me try to close this because I got one of my colleagues recommend to move forward.
Councilman Gaffney, can I make a statement? You know, I always like to err on the side I would like to err on the side of caution, so I don't think we should see it today. But I totally agree with Councilwoman Cumber. I don't see why we can't hear this project come the 23rd. General Counsel had explained to me why we can't see it then. I understand we shouldn't see it here today, but on the 23rd, I don't see no reason why we shouldn't be able to hear it then. That's just my opinion.
May I speak for 1 second?
Wait a minute. We have a dialogue up here. Go ahead, Al.
Thank you, through the chair. And I just want to point out that and make it clear, like, I agree with what Lori said about having a chilling effect. I just want to make sure that we have all the information possible, especially on something that it's this important. And so I'm just wanting to make sure, and I understand that Mr. Sawyer is as conservative as possible and certainly don't want to set the situation up where we'd have bid protests and so forth, although it seems to happen a lot these days everywhere around the country. But I do just want to make sure that we have the most information possible so that we can make whatever decision, you know, we need to make at the end of the day. And obviously that's not predetermined today. So I just want to make sure that was clear.
Any other comments? So I let you close, Tom.
Can I please speak? My name's Tom Rensing, president of KBJ Architects. And I was part of the Jacobs team on the original submission for the RFP that the city of Jacksonville advertised. We were unanimously selected, and actually Lori Boyer was one of the members who unanimously selected us. We also, in August of 2020, last summer, and this is my question, we have an unsolicited proposal in at DIA right now. And they also had a special committee that guaranteed us a presentation, and this was before this notice of disposition came out. So I don't understand legally why we're not allowed to present on an unsolicited proposal that's been in since August of 2020 to DIA, and their special committee said, we will guarantee you a presentation, and that's a year before this notice of disposition. I don't understand legally how they can proceed with the notice of disposition with a unsolicited proposal meeting their criteria. How do you proceed ahead with that without giving us the fair chance to submit? And we've already submitted it. It's formally submitted. It was formally acknowledged in August of 2020. And we're not talking about the one in January that was part somehow they can shoot it for the Florida Bay. My question here is, why aren't we allowed the legal condition to present on the unsolicited proposal that is clearly before DIA already?
Let me try to close with this. I think the best way to perhaps get the Jacobs Group in a proper perspective, I think the council president as well as a couple of my colleagues feel like we may want to wait till all the solicited bids come in. You guys will have your day with all of us to be able to say what you want. And somehow we like it, and we'll then have discussions. I don't want to challenge DIA today in front of everybody. I think it's just more important that if you guys can be patient for perhaps another month, we'll schedule another meeting at the proper time. And everything perhaps you said, we'll move forward. Okay, unfortunately, we didn't talk. This is a committee. And we didn't discuss nothing with DIA or none of my colleagues what we wanted to talk about. Often what happens, so the community can know that people call us and say they want to present, and so we send this out, but we don't actually reach out to DIA and say this is what we're going to discuss today, so this is a mess-up. God works in mysterious ways because you will have your day. You're going to walk out here knowing at some proper time, given guidance from the legal hero, as DIA, you'll be able to present what's been sitting for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and some of my colleagues may like it, some may not, and we'll then move beyond that point. I'm not going to challenge her or nobody else today. I just assure y'all we will have a notice meeting in December. It may be the key thing is getting my colleagues together and speaking about it, okay?
What do we do with our unsolicited proposal?
So we will. What I would do is I will give DIA a chance to respond to that at that particular meeting because it's going to be about y'all, okay? I'm not going to put her on the spot or her staff on the spot or us on the spot. We'll come back that day and we'll discuss it.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. We got one, and I know if anybody else want to speak for public comment, Mr. Oliver, Connell, Oliver, you want to come up and speak. This changes a lot, but trust me, we'll get where we need to be. I promise y'all this. Come on, sir.
Yes, Carnell, our address is on file. Fundamentally, I hear the discussion is about the technical aspects of how y'all pursue these projects that are coming into the downtown area. But as these bids are coming out, there are fundamentally three goals I think that our community needs to address. One is workforce development in the underserved communities. Number two would be taking a look at trying to carve out affordable housing. When I say affordable housing, I mean taking in people who have been isolated in impoverished conditions and integrating them with people who have the wealth and the means in their lives. And number three, to see if some of this development that's going on, there's a fund that could be established to help with the homeless population situation, like creating more housing, something of that nature. These are three basic goals that I would like for Lori Boyer and council members to consider as these RFPs are coming out and seeing if these developers are willing to meet these basic requirements.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I don't have nobody else that field that I want to use. So if not that, then any other closing comments? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, through the chair. I think that it would be helpful. It would certainly be helpful for me. And I know we're going to talk about the next meeting. But I think we kind of need to, at least I do, need to understand what our purpose is and make sure that we're not working at cross purposes with DIA. And because I feel like, personally, being in the position that we're in where we're expected to hear something and we're told we can't, I get it from a legal perspective. It sounds like DIA didn't know we were going to hear it. Like, I just, if we're going to, I'm not really sure what our charge is and how we're coordinating, because I think that nobody wants to be in this position, whether it's potential developers, whether it's DIA, whether it's us. I don't think it's fair to anyone. And so I just want to make sure that what we're doing here is something that we know what we're doing. We know what we're supposed to be getting out of it. We know what we're supposed to be, you know, are we supposed to be bringing something to our colleagues and so forth, but that we're working in conjunction with what's happening throughout the city so we don't end up in this position again, because I don't think anyone's happy this morning.
And I'm going to comment and let my colleague, and I think you're right. I think the good news is this. We'll have a chance to hear anybody that perhaps may want to present it somehow, in my opinion, if we like that presentation or that particular project. We can always present that to DIA as a council committee that's saying this is something we want you to take a look at. That's what, from one, I always thought. We understand that we both work together, but if somehow this or any project that perhaps we might like, we can always present that to DIA since we got to make the decision and saying this is a project we want you to take a look at. And we strongly, you know, and that and terminology. And let me close with Mr. Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm always happy when I'm here with my colleagues, so I'm not upset this morning. On a little lighter note, and I do have a recommendation for an item in our next meeting. I don't know if y'all have done it, but I did the downtown scooter tour about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And probably Ms. Boria can tell better than I can, but I think there's about over close to $1.5 billion of private investment going on downtown. And a lot of them, I thought I knew all of them, but boy, I saw a bunch of stuff I had no idea was going on. I would highly encourage, and I'm going to put out a shameless plug for him, Alex Apikas. Had a group of, I guess, about 15 of us that took us around. It was about 3 hours. So please do it if you haven't. It'll be well worth your time. Along those lines, I think what could be opportunity for us for an agenda item is I know there's a lot of permitting, a lot of inspections going on, and a lot of these projects that are being done in the private sector are on a very low ROI, return on investment. So I think it'd be nice for us to be able to know if we can make sure they're not being held up by the permitting process and the inspection process, waiting on the city while they're trying to get the product delivered. So perhaps maybe, I'm not saying that it's not being expedited. I'm just saying it'd be nice for us to know if there's something we can do to make sure that that's not part of the holdup on getting downtown developed, because it's pretty spectacular and there's a lot more that's planned right now too. So that's my input to my colleagues, besides having a very happy Thanksgiving.
All right, in closing. Oh.
Can I just say I'm glad someone had the foresight to bring scooters to the city.
I will give you credit for that. And so, Ms. Borg, can you, at the next meeting, and we'll keep it brief, we'll keep this presentation, bring us some updates on projects that's already been approved by DIA. And I think, and Councilman Bowman, if you can reach out to perhaps Mr. Killeworth and talk about a process and perhaps get him to come so we can have him to speak on the process. Okay? And saying that, thank y'all so much for coming. God bless y'all. Mm-hmm.